Hey guys, my name is Andre Jick, and tonight is April 30th. We have a very special guest with us to do a podcast. His name is Blake Voigt. Blake, are you on the line?
Yes, sir.
Hey, what's up, man? How are you?
I am good. How are you?
Awesome. I'm great. We have a whole bunch of questions for you, anywhere from how you created Reform, your creative process, and how is it like working for David Copperfield, and a whole bunch of other goodies. So let's get started right now.
Cool.
All righty. So the first question is post number 2 from Haikiba. He asks you, how did you come up with Reform? Pretty general question, but walk us through it. How is your inspiration? Where do you get your inspiration from? What is your creative process? Kind of, how did you come up with Reform?
I came up with Reform. I started working on it about 2 years ago when I started creating my own stuff. And the whole reason why I created my own stuff was because I kind of enjoyed the feeling of, like, performing stuff that I knew that I had created.
Right.
So, and I kind of knew the ins and outs of it better that way. I definitely got inspiration from other people. But that's where the whole thing stemmed from. And I love the TNR plot, and I love Danny Garcia's Torn effect. Just the one thing that I wanted to add to it was that I wanted you to only have to use one card. And I messed around with lots of other TNRs, but I hated the fact that you needed to do a little bit of setup or, you know, take something away or add something. And the whole goal with this was just to start and end with one card. And that's what I shot for when I created it.
And it's awesome. I love it.
Thank you. It's fun.
Yeah, it's great. So, next question. Post number 3 from King of Hearts. He's asking, how long have you been doing magic?
I started my interest in magic when I was 8 years old, and I'm 22, so it was 14 years ago. But it really got serious when I got in high school. Mm-hmm. So about 8 years ago, it got serious with doing restaurant magic once a week, birthday parties, corporate events, and then I only started creating stuff 2 years ago. So
gotcha. That's fairly recently. That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's fun.
So next question comes from post number 5, Geo. He's asking you, we've already kind of touched on this briefly, what was the creation process of Reform? But the second question he's asking is, how do you pronounce your last name?
It is pronounced Voigt, like the basketball company, or John Voigt, I guess. So
awesome.
But I answered anything.
Take us a little bit through the creation process. Was it kind of, you've already kind of brushed up on this, but...
Yeah, more detailed, the way it was created was that... I love Ben Harris's Hoodwinked, which if you're familiar with that, you can see obvious resemblance in the first phase of that, of Reform. But I wanted to take it further because Hoodwink, you just deals with two halves, and I wanted it to be a four-piece effect. And if you're familiar with another Theory 11 fella, Kelvin Chow, he and I went to Purdue together.
Right.
And so we'd hang out there, and I showed him this effect where I take a card, I rip it into four pieces, and I waved my hand over it and went back together. And he was like, that's pretty cool, you know, it could use some work. And one day on a 45-minute road trip, I created the piece-by-piece restoration part of it. So,
right.
And Kelvin and everybody else seemed to like that a lot better. So.
That's awesome. So he definitely helped you along some of the ways, right?
Yeah, he's so good with cards, and he's absurd, and it's really great, I feel like, having someone that's better than you around you, even if it's through Skype or, you know, through online, just to have somebody to push you, because I would have settled for it, and he pushed me, which is awesome.
That's awesome. It's always great to have someone push you like that.
Exactly, yeah.
Next question is post number 8 from Black Ghost. This is a quick question. I wanted to also ask you, what book inspired you the most? Do you even read books?
I read, yes. I can read.
Can you read?
I can read, yes. I love books. I love DVDs. I love it all.
Do you have any one book in particular?
I don't really think so. There's not one like that I consider like the one I read every night. I try to read everything. I love all types of books. Like I get inspiration from magic books, obviously, but I feel like, especially in the last 2 years, I've kind of stepped away from magic instructional books.
Right.
because it kind of hinders the creative process because you copy what they do.
Yeah.
And but there are some exceptions. Like, I love books where it leaves, you know, it helps with the creative process, like Designing Miracles, or I love John G's book, One Degree. If you haven't read that, that's an awesome book. So,
awesome.
For sure. Yeah.
All right. Next question, and this is something I've always wondered too, comes from post number 9, Simply Magic 14. He's kind of asking several questions, and this is kind of some of the questions I've drilled you with when I first met you.
Okay.
And he says, last I knew you were taking classes at Purdue, now that you're part of the Chris Kenner Think Tank, working for David Copperfield, his question is, will you finish your classes? How has this changed your life, and do you think you and Kaylin will come up with an effect together and release it?
Those are a lot of questions.
That third one is optional, but how will you finish your classes, and how has it changed your life?
I very, very much want to finish classes because I was so close when I took a break currently from school. But what was difficult with school was that I don't like, you know, doing anything 50% of the, you know, like I like putting myself 100%
into
anything.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, and I was doing 50% magic, 50% school, and they were both suffering. And it was actually my parents, which was awesome, that suggested that I give magic a go for a year. And if nothing comes of it, then, you know, like, school is always there waiting. And luckily, you know, within 6 months, something happened. So a few things happened, which was a good sign. So I will finish school for sure, probably not in school. I'll probably finish online. That way I can continue doing what I'm doing now. But
right.
I definitely will get a degree, especially since my dad spent so much money already.
Right. I think it's an important question to raise
because
so many people in this industry are in that same position where so
right.
much of this industry is a bunch of young people like ourselves. And it's very difficult at the time of our lives to juggle everything kind of
exactly.
back in school. Or
yeah.
And you're one of the people that this has impacted the most, and you know, how has it changed you? It's a great question. All
right,
right. So next question is post number 12 by Zen Darkfire. He's asking, what is it like to work for David Copperfield?
It's incredible. It's unbelievable. It's awesome. And I think I mentioned earlier, like, it's always great having someone to push you. And like, I had Kelvin at Purdue, but now it's just taken to a totally absurd level. Having someone like David Copperfield to push your creativity to the max, you know, it's unbelievable, and it's making me, and I know it's making Kaylin better creators and magicians, and he's just an awesome person to be around and learn from.
Right.
So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Number 14, post number 14 comes from Ned. How will we trust 89? I have no idea.
Nice.
He's asking question number 3. How have you got through discouraging moments, if any, and kept your magic, kept your passion for magic hungry?
Oh man, it's not that I've kept it hungry, it's I can't turn it off, which is ridiculous to say, but I've never really been that down with it. I guess it got kind of hard with school at times, but like the whole thing with creating and performing and everything, like my whole thing is I love to perform 100 times better, more than creating.
Mm-hmm.
So if any time I got down, I could just go out and perform, whether it be for friends or literally you can ask my friends, I would just go to a bar by myself and perform for random strangers just because I get this itch and I have to do it. So
right. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Next question comes from post number 18 from Josh Simpson. He says, or he asks, explain your thought process not only for reform, but for your other effects. What, in other words, what is your inspiration, or what is your inspiration?
It has to definitely fit my style, which is really odd and quirky.
Right.
I'm very weird, and I'm very corny. So a lot of my stuff kind of fits that because I design it around a presentation that's fun or corny. Like with reform, usually when I present it, I say, you know, to people, just to get into it while I'm folding it, I say, you know, have you ever heard of the sawing a lady in half illusion? Most people have. And I say, well, this is that effect on a college budget. So like, it's like jokes like that are horrible jokes, but I'm aware that they're bad. And it just kind of like, I do magic that fits my style, and I create magic that's more fun than it is like I never have ever approached magic as in, like, I'm going to fool you. I know more than you do.
Right.
It's just like, we're going to have fun for the next 5 minutes, and I'm a goofball, and so I hope you like it, I guess.
It's a great trick.
Thanks.
Next question is from post number 22, Pie Guy. He is asking, how much of your magic is, in fact, dark sorcery?
Oh, it's about, you know, 50-50. You kind of have to mix it in. Because if it was all dark sorcery, you know, the government would probably get in on it and stuff. But I find that a good general mix keeps people guessing. So
nice.
Yeah.
Question number 25, Joshua UK Magic. He's asking, what is your favorite thing about the art of magic?
Oh, man. I love... This sounds so cheesy, but I just love making people smile. And I love having a good time. I love meeting new people. And I think I can get all of that out of the art of magic. And it makes me happy. And I love making other people happy. And it's a great, like, conversation piece. It's a great segue into meeting people or, you know.
Right.
That's why I love it, I guess.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
and I would have to add to that by saying I think one of the greatest things about it is that you get to meet so many people.
Yeah,
and, like make totally. So many friends. I think for life that just because through this, you know, through this little art form and that we all share in love, and I think it's great.
Yeah, it's just it's awesome. It's weird finding out how connected everybody. It's a tight knit community, which is just awesome.
Right.
Yeah.
So the next question is. Comes from post number 28 from 3RYK. He's asking, how important is simplicity when you go about creating an effect?
I think it depends on the effect. I mean, I have a few effects that the method is just like uber simple when you break it down, and I have a few effects that like the method probably needs to be, you know, simplified a lot because it's really complicated. And I think when it comes to method, it doesn't matter. I think it's what the spectator's view of it is. And I think the spectator should always view it as something simple. I think if the spectator can't walk away and explain the effect in one sentence, then it's not really worth doing because it's confusing, you know.
Right.
So, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Post number 32 from Alhambra Cadabra.
Nice.
Asking, of all art forms, why did you pick magic?
I don't know. I love all art. So, I mean, magic's just my favorite, but I love drawing, painting. I love to sing. So all of those things I haven't stopped. It's just, I think I've kind of made my focus magic,
right?
But it's not that I've blocked out all the other art forms. It's sure. That I like to combine all of, like, especially movies. I love movies.
Right.
I like trying to combine all of them into magic. It's just I've chosen magic as the main medium, I right. guess.
On which to express yourself.
Exactly, yes.
Right. Awesome. And question number 34 comes from Bandit. He's asking, when did you get started in magic? And what kind of magic do you usually do?
I got started when I was 8 years old by an awesome magician named Mark Lehman from Lebanon, Indiana, which is my hometown. And I got started by watching him at Pizza Hut every week. And it just was the most interesting thing to me. And I loved it and I couldn't get enough of it. And then what kind of magic I perform is oddly enough, usually I try to just perform my own stuff now.
Right.
Which is kind of weird, but like... it's just more rewarding, I think. Obviously, there are classics that I do all the time that are other people's, but like Ambitious Card. But it's my own. Usually, if I'm performing someone else's trick, it's my own version of that trick. Right. So,
your own stuff.
Right. I feel like my magic has gotten a lot better over the last 2 years because I put myself in it.
Right.
And it was really hard to start doing, but now that I've started doing it, it just makes performing it way more enjoyable when it has a piece of you in it, I guess.
I would agree with that. Same thing yeah. with cardistry. It's kind of
Yeah, man, definitely. I love your style. It's definitely copyable or impersonable.
Yeah.
Very fun to watch you do.
I definitely
crap.
Have a joke right now. I don't know. It's like, enough about me. Let's talk about you. What's your favorite thing about me? Yeah. Right.
What?
No, nothing. All right, post number 35.
Oh, no, I love Andre Jick. You're my favorite.
No, it's... All right, post number 35 comes from Janai. He's asking, while creating Reform, did you first say, I want impromptu angle-proof TNR now? And then your brain just kind of clicked and it produced it? Or did your hands just come up with it by accident?
Oh, my gosh, that's a funny story. So I created it to be a one-card TNR. And I wanted it, obviously, to be angle-proof from the front because that's kind of a checklist, I think, kind of one of the important things. It should be angle-proof from at least one angle. And I wanted it to be one card. I wanted it to be impromptu, no gimmicks, start and finish. Obviously, you can finish other ways, which is, you know, just whatever fits you the best. But fitting me the best, starting and ending with one card. And then one day I was doing it for a group of friends, and I didn't realize that a crowd had gathered behind me, and I was doing Reform,
right?
And I get the reactions were like enormous, and I had no idea why, and it was because the people I was showing it to were watching people behind me freak out,
right?
And that's when I realized that, holy crap, it looked the exact same from behind.
That's
and
awesome.
Ever since that day, I kind of exploited that.
That's
one thing I love to do, which is kind of very situational, and you have to know the people, but I love putting my arms over someone's face and performing it for a group of people, but with that one person there, and that way you get like a picture-in-picture reaction, you know.
That's awesome. I think I saw you do that with Kalen when we were filming together. You probably did something
like
that.
Yeah, Kalen's awesome.
Kalen is awesome. I love Kalen. All right, post number 35, again, comes from the same guy. He's asking, why is all good magic created and performed in Chris Kenner's kitchen? Is there some spiritual presence lingering there that aids the process of creating visual miracles?
You know what? If there was a spiritual presence, man, it's Chris, man. That's what, like, the whole, you know, I've touched on this twice already, but having somebody to push you, you know, beyond what, you know, like, Chris Kenner is such a name that, like, when you hear it, and even when I first met him, it was so nerve-wracking and everything. You just want to do the best you can or even more. And, you know, Skyping with people that are better than you is awesome, but actually being in his kitchen, like, knowing that feeling, like, you know you have to create and perform
right
better than you think you're able to. So,
right.
There's a presence.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with that. There's a godly presence there. All right, so post number 38 comes from All right. There are dozens of TNR effects out there. What was your main focus point on making your effects stick out from the rest? Why is this different? Why is your particular TNR different from all the rest of them, aside from being
awesome?
Well,
I never created it to release it. Like, that was not my intention. I just created it because I wanted it for me. I wanted to perform. I wanted to be able to, in my set, because whenever I'm performing for friends, it's never, you know, ambitious card routine, two card transpo, hold on, let me turn around for a second, get my TNR ready. Like, I wanted to be able to do a TNR trick in the middle of doing anything else. Like, I just wanted someone to hand me a deck of cards and me be able to say, do you care if I destroy your Joker? Because I want to show you a really cool trick.
Right.
You know, and that way it can be done anytime, anywhere, surrounded. And that's, I think, what makes it different from anybody else's.
I would agree.
So, yeah.
Definitely. Post number 44 comes from PGA Magic. And this is something that a lot of people have been talking about, which is, does it bother you that you have to tear the card up after you restored it on the And how do you deal with it? What is your pattern? What is your presentation to it on handling that kind of action?
Oh, man, it's different every time. I've never said the same pattern twice, but I think I have a consistent, you know, go-to
right.
line, and that's just, you know, what I'm holding in my hand is impossible, you know, no matter what you think. So I have to destroy this because there can't be proof that impossible things just occurred. You know, and, you know, it's impossible. What you just saw, it can't happen. That's what I do whenever I'm doing it, just solely bare bones, one card TNR. But you can end it, you know, whole if you, you know, add in another card. If you can get creative, you know, on a basic level, you can get creative and solve that issue if you have that issue with it. But one of the best reactions I ever got from doing it was, you know, like saying there's no proof of this occurring. And I was performing it for a girl at a wedding once. I was doing walk around. And she loved it. Everybody loved it. And then I ripped the card up. I handed the pieces to her. And her dad walked up right as I handed her the pieces. And he was like, "What's all the commotion? What's going on?" And she held up the pieces. She's like, he took this card. He ripped it up and he put it back together. And he was like, "Well, it's ripped up now. That doesn't make any sense." And she goes, "I know. I can't prove it."
That's awesome. And the crowd. Yeah, as a pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That was great. I've never seen a spectator. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No. It was very fulfilling when that happened.
Yeah, when I was filming the Reform, the DVD, I've never seen a single spectator react negatively or anticlimactically to you ripping up the card. Never.
No. Once.
It always made sense in the context of what you were doing.
Thank you. But yeah, I think that's again with how you present it. I mean, I've never ever gotten a negative comment from a layman. The only people I get negative comments from at like conventions or magicians, like, "Oh, that sucks" at the end. But like from layman, it's because it's a fun thing. Like, because it's not, "Hey, look, I'm going to put this card back together and you're going to have no idea how I did it." If I presented it like that, I feel like layman at the end would be like, "Well, you probably really didn't do it because you didn't hand it back to me whole."
Right.
But because it's just like, "I'm going to do something fun for a few seconds here, but at the end, you're going to have no proof of it ever occurring." Then it's kind of a fun thing. And then the bare bones, like when you break it down, if you do any torn and restored card and you do Reform, people are going to walk away saying, "He took a card, ripped it up, and put it back together." You know,
right.
You know, the end product is the same, except this one is completely impromptu, which is what I was shooting for.
Yeah, it's great. All right, post number 48 comes from Super Lee. He asks, "How long do you practice a new effect before presenting it to someone else?" And I remember you kind of explaining it in Reform where you practiced it so much you can pretty much do it without even looking at it. Can you elaborate on that?
I think it depends on each effect because there are some effects that I'll create that afternoon, and the whole thing with, like, you can practice an effect in front of the mirror a million times, but until you actually show it to real people, you'll have no idea whether it's a good trick or not. So I have tricks where I've created them and then that night gone out and performed them, even if they're not perfect, just because if no one reacts at all, then it's not worth putting the time into when it comes to creating. But if you're purchasing an effect from an artist that you respect and admire, then you know that the trick gets reactions, and then you know it's worth putting the time and effort into learning it, you know, before you go out and doing it. Like with Reform, obviously I didn't go out and do it until I could do it with my eyes closed. I could do it while watching TV. And then once the mechanics were out of it, especially, like, you know, with like cardistry, like once you can do a move without thinking about it, then it's more fun to perform it.
Sure, of course, yeah.
So you can put, you know, a presentation into it. You can be fun with it. You don't have to be awkward in your presentation.
Right, I agree.
So
next question comes from post number 50 from Crazy Man. He's asking, how long did you get yourself recognized by David? In other words, how long did it take you to get recognized by David Copperfield? And I'll elaborate on the question by asking, what advice can you give to young people and or anyone in general on getting recognized like that and getting recognition and kind of, you know, can you elaborate?
Getting recognition from the magic community was just like a respect and like a admiration goal of mine. Like, I've always looked up to Theory 11 people, like you, meeting you, Dan White and JB was like a ridiculous a couple months ago when that finally happened. But, it's not like I'm creating magic so I can meet David Copperfield. Like, it wasn't that. It was like, I'm creating magic because I love performing it. And then getting inspiration from other magicians, I wanted to get out and actually meet them. And then when I went to conventions, conventions were awesome. Skyping with different people. Like, I met Kaylin through Skype, Patrick Kuhn, two of my best friends, online. So I guess getting recognition ultimately was just a combination of of getting out there, showing other people my style and my things, and then luckily, you know, thankfully, you know, people liked it, so that was cool.
Definitely.
Cool. Yeah.
So the next question comes from, let's see, I kind of lost it. Let's see. Oh, okay, there we go. From /post number 53, he asks, who was your favorite magician growing up? Who were your inspirations kind of growing up and getting to where you are today?
Huge inspiration, again, was the magician I watched when I was like 8 was Mark Lehman. You know, restaurant magic was the first thing I saw. So obviously that was the first thing I tackled, was performing in restaurants. And that's where I got my inspiration to perform, was definitely from him. And I love his performance style. He's definitely very performance-based, like storyteller, amazing, good at presenting. So I got inspiration from that. And then when it came to creating, probably my biggest inspiration was Danny Garcia. I love his creative style, and I've never bought an effect by him that I haven't performed or enjoyed, you know, doing. So,
right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Post number 60 comes from 08 Tennis. We only have time for a few more, so we're just going to keep it rolling. Post number 60 is from 08 Tennis. He's asking, what advice would you give to magicians who struggle at times to come up with methods and for brainstorming ideas? In other words, if you have kind of writer's block, the equivalent of, you know, an author writing a book, well, what advice would you give to kind of spice up your creative juices?
I would say totally step away from it. I think too many people stay too close with a project, and I luckily have, you know, friends or to tell me that, like, my girlfriend's awesome. I would be working on something for hours on end for a couple days, and I would just get really frustrated, and she would just say, you know, put it down, probably because she was annoyed that all I was playing with was cards, but also because, you know, she knew that once I stepped away from it, that, you know, the issue could be solved faster, easier. And also, not only being interested in magic. I feel like if you only surround yourself with the art of magic, then you're limiting yourself with inspiration and different abilities to solve an issue. Like, you know, like, to put the cards down and watch a movie, you know, maybe then you never know where inspiration will hit you. So
I agree, definitely. And yeah. One of the last questions we'll ask is coming from post number 66 from Jeff32. He's asking, when you create, I think this is something you and Chris were talking about. I don't quite remember when, but you guys asked, or it was kind of a chat between you guys. He's asking, do you come up with the method first or kind of like the idea first, and then you come up with the method?
Yeah, it's never, it's always both.
It's always different.
I mean, yeah, it's always different. You know, like with the TNR thing, like, I didn't have this ability to rip and put together a piece of paper and then go, oh, you know what, I'm going to do a torn and restored card. Like, that wasn't the way it happened. It was, I want to do a torn and restored card, I got to come up with moves to do that. And then the reverse of that is that you're fiddling around at a grocery store with the most random object, and then you say, oh my gosh, that looks like a magic trick, I need to develop a presentation for this. So
right.
It's
right.
It's just keeping an open mind.
It's always different.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. All right, last question we're going to get on page 7. Couldn't get to the last page. We're running out of time, but
okay.
Post number 69, ZManKing585, what's next from you? What are you coming up with next? What are your plans in the future?
I have a few projects that have been filmed, so I'm hoping that those will hit the market within the next year. All of those things that are coming out, I have worked on for the last 2 years. So anything that I'm working on now, obviously, I don't ever want to jump to the, fall in the hole of creating something and then putting out a DVD the next week. Because that's not why I create it. I said that I create to perform it.
Right.
And if I, within the next couple years of obviously being surrounded by people like you and Kaylin and Chris and David, stuff will probably come up that I like doing, and if in 2 years I feel like it's, you know, to the point of where I do it all the time and I think it'd be cool if other people did it, then sure, there'd be, you know, hopefully avenues for me to release more stuff, right. Hopefully. So
play it by ear, essentially.
Exactly.
Awesome. Cool. Well, that's that. This comes to the conclusion with our podcast with Blake Voigt. It is awesome. Thank you guys for all the questions. And I hope you listen to the podcast. There's a lot of great info. There's a lot of great advice and personal information about Blake and the creative process and reform in general. So we hope you guys enjoyed it. And we'll see you guys next time. Take care.
Bye!